Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Close Up. I'm your host, Joe.
And I'm Justin.
Today, we're doing basically an essay-style format about coming-of-age movies, their rough history, and kind of why they're not that popular anymore. So, getting into our medium shot, here's effectively the idea. Hollywood coming-of-age movies pervaded popular culture in the 80s through the 2000s, though they were around before. Their decline was sudden, brought about by a changing American film industry, changing attitudes towards the teenager as a demographic, and because North American society is in a state of arrested development. And note here, we're talking mostly about live-action coming-of-age movies, because a lot of the tropes that are in decline that we're going to be discussing still exist in animation and comic books and other kinds of medium. Some of them are even alive and well on TV. We are talking mostly about films here. So, some history on the coming-of-age genre in film as I see it, at least as far as the mid-20th century. I noticed that a lot of these movies are about middle-class or rich white Americans, often teens or preteens. And going back to movies of the 60s and 70s, I noticed that some of the patterns I can see are movies like American Graffiti and The Graduate show coming of age is nearly traumatic. It's a hard break between youthful ways and adult responsibilities. There were more consequences for tough decisions in movies back then. They were more dramatic in a lot of cases on the whole. And then the 80s shifted coming of age into a more adventure-focused vein, where kids and teenagers rebelled against oppressive establishments and experienced fantastical things. There were all kinds of fantasy movies in particular. E.T., The Goonies, Neverending Story, Labyrinth, even other more sci-fi ones like War Games. There were just a lot of these more fantastical adventure scenarios that kids went on in the 80s. And then the 90s offered many playful versions of heightened reality with personality-driven stories of romance and teenage hijinks, but also a lot of comedy. The 90s is like, well, just for example, the other night I watched She's All That and Clueless, and, you know, later on there was like American Pie, those sorts of things. And then I found the 2000s are a bit raunchier comedy or more awkward, kind of as a style, and opted for more shock humor. But also, you know, stuff like Superbad. But also, in a way, the 2000s shifted back towards a more fantastical way, where you got a bunch of things like Harry Potter coming out in the 2000s. So, like, we got more fantasy elements back in the 2000s after the 90s was relatively a heightened but more grounded version than the 80s. And then in the 2010s, I see coming-of-age movies starring teenagers steeply declined. A lot of the ones coming out in this decade seem to lean more on the dramatic side, but still funny. There was like more dramedies. And then in the 2020s, I notice movies starting to diverge between more dramatic ones and more comedic ones, which I forgot to say earlier is, I think, another symptom of the 90s as well. In the 90s, coming-of-age movies were diverging more into that heightened comedic territory, but also more dramatic fare. Some examples I have here are Good Will Hunting, Boys in the Hood, more drama. Mm-hmm. So basically, that's the pattern I see. They used to be more dramatic with some comedies in there. They got more adventure-focused. Then they went into heightened realities, contrasted with some more heavy dramas. And then they got into like raunchy, awkward comedy, started getting into dramedies, and now they're more back into comedies or dramas. These are the evolutions. Another interesting thing I find about these movies, just taking a look at lists of them and when they were set, I find that a lot of them are period pieces, actually. They...
Like, which period of... Like, are you talking movies in the 80s are set as a period piece, or...?
Yeah, I'm talking a lot of these movies are set... presumably in the period of the writer of the childhoods of the writers who made them, like,
so American, like 20 years back basically, or 30 years even further,
some of them not even that far back. Like American Graffiti was made in the early 70s and it was set in the early 60s. Kind of based on George Lucas's teenhood in California. That one is more overt. There are other ones like The Sandlot, set in the 60s, Dazed and Confused, set in the 70s. Other even newer ones, like Super 8 was set in the 70s. Lady Bird was set in the 2000s. Call Me By Your Name, set in 1983. So there seems to be this... there are, of course, the majority of these are contemporary stories for whatever era they came out, but there is a long-standing tradition for these movies of setting them in an earlier, more nostalgic time. Very... likely experienced by the writer, because, well, you know, the number one rule of writing is write what you know, and writers aren't necessarily super well versed on today's youth, but they can talk about the experiences they had and hope it resonates with modern audiences, the similarities anyway. So any thoughts on that before I get into the first point? Yeah, so point one on why coming-of-age movies are in steep decline is the changing film industry. Basically, Hollywood has killed off mid-budget movies and opted for more incredibly low-budget movies that'll turn a massive profit if they do very well, or just be a loss that they didn't really care about because, we just put... like 20 million to this, who cares? And then your tentpole blockbuster movies that they're sinking $200-300 million in and hoping it cracks a minimum billion or it's considered a financial failure. Hollywood doesn't really do movies in the $40-100 million range much anymore.
No.
And that's where most of these coming of age movies lie, is in that mid-budget range.
Well, and it's appropriate for what they're doing, too. It's not for these types of movies. You don't need a heck of a lot, but you still need some.
Unless you're going the fantasy route like Harry Potter.
Well, then, yeah, that's a different story.
Some of these movies do get on the more fantastical side, but mostly there's a certain level of grounding in them. And I think another reason is in the vein of Hollywood liking a sure thing, or something so low budget, like, hey, great if it succeeds, is that a lot of these movies were starring actors who were largely unknown at the times they came out. A lot of these movies have casts that just completely blew up later. Like, I'm just looking up the Dazed and Confused cast. So, like, in the Dazed and Confused cast, you have Parker Posey, Matthew McConaughey, Ben Affleck, Mila Jovovich. A lot of these people who were huge later on, but basically unknown at the time that movie came out. And that's just one example. A lot of these movies star virtual unknowns who became super popular later. And I think Hollywood very much does not like to rely on unknown talent anymore. They used to have these mid-budget movies starring casts of unknowns, and cool, they became somebody's. But now they rely on tentpoles and big actors. So if they're not really spending mid-budget movies anyways, they're not real, like, they don't really want to rely on these unknowns.
Well, I think the only medium that's doing that, like, they're, yeah, they use unknowns in TV, which is blowing up big stars.
Yeah.
But by the medium of TV, you've changed things. Like, you can't,
TV is a long form format. You get to grow with these people over time. If it's not an overnight success on TV, it can grow into something with a cult following if it does consistently and finds a footing.
Yeah, so it does. It builds up the new actors, but then it leaves, you know, there's a gap in movies where it's like, okay, we're not using any new actors. You know what? Let's try them out on TV, or I don't even know if they do that.
I think TV, you're right. I think TV, if anything, is the picking grounds from which a lot of new actors come to prominence.
But does that cause an issue that it's like, well, now that creates it, it's you're not getting your mid-budget movies because you're hiring people who've proved themselves and they're going to cost more. And
exactly. Or, you know, you start getting the opposite way on prestige TV, where prestige TV for a lot of the last 10 years is hiring Hollywood A-listers on their shows, and they're not doing unknowns as much if they think something needs to be a sure hit. I think one big thing to bring up in this discussion, which is, to be clear, still mostly about movies, but I think something like Stranger Things is very much a show in this 80s adventure mode, mostly starring unknowns, save for Winona Ryder. I don't think David Harbour was in anything, but Winona Ryder was kind of, hey, okay, she's the draw of this show. She was a star in the 90s. Let's watch Stranger Things. And then it ballooned into this big hit. But like I said, it's one of the very few live action shows that are still doing these coming of age things. But like I said, TV is a different medium, and there's only a couple on TV that are doing it that aren't cartoons. Stranger Things is one of them. Star Wars Skeleton Crew was another one, which I personally really enjoyed and wish it did better. That's another one of those 80s adventure sort of deals. But speaking of Netflix in particular, I do think it's worth bringing up things like Stranger Things, because I think Netflix is almost single-handedly, in terms of Hollywood, keeping the coming-of-age genre afloat right now. And to be clear, they are producing mostly slop content that's very low effort and not mass appealing, as this genre has been in the past. But stuff like The Kissing Booth is a very popular franchise for teens. I think they made three of those things. They have a lot of teenage-focused content. Stranger Things is also huge, but in terms of movies, Netflix is really the only game in town making new coming-of-age movies. And I think that's one reason they're very popular with a younger demographic. Nobody else really wants to take the chance on not IP original content with actors you haven't heard of. So the changing film industry is definitely a factor killing coming-of-age movies. Any thoughts to share there? I think another big thing is societal changing attitudes towards the teenager as a demographic. And that's kind of basically what I mean is how Hollywood thinks about teenagers in general, how society views teenagers, but importantly, how writers of media view teenagers. I think writers today just don't know what to do with coming of age stories. Because you think about how quickly our culture changes in the last 10 to 15 years. And the adults who write these things just can't keep up. If you want to write a story about a dramatic view of growing up that's not a period piece, well, a lot of these dramatic takes have been done before. And when it comes to modern teenagers, I find that a lot of them seem to be more concerned about the state of the world in general, as opposed to their own individual futures. There's more of an activist bent towards young people now.
So coming of age doesn't really matter. It's more, it's outwards focused more.
I think that's a thing for dramatic focused stories. For comedy, what's funny to kids changes ridiculously quickly on the internet. I think of that Abe Simpson quote from The Simpsons. I used to be with it. Then they changed what it was. Now what it is weird and scary to me. It'll happen to you. Which, that's how I think writers feel about modern comedy when they're trying to appeal to teenagers. They can't, the trends are gone by the time the movie's made. I think about how cringy something like Fortnite, like Thor playing Fortnite in Avengers Endgame was, which could, like, to be fair to Fortnite, it did outlast that, but it very clearly could have been a dated joke by the time they did it. And I'm sure I've seen countless other ones that were like, okay, they clearly made this movie a few years ago when that was a thing. But the things are constantly changing. How can you make something funny to teenagers if you're trying to make a comedic coming of age now? And in terms of adventure movies, I think the big problem with adventure movies is that we as a culture are more averse than ever to seeing kids in danger situations. After multiple generations of helicopter parenting, just, and paranoia in general about, oh, what could happen to kids? You're going to die if you do anything but leave your house. Forget the being the kind of generation where it's just go out and do whatever till the streetlights come on. Kids nowadays don't really get into adventures, and I think we as a culture don't really want to see kids having adventures because it sets a dangerous precedent.
Well, I think that, like, that's something I experienced recently. Like, I watched Teen Wolf for the first time, and in it, they get up on top of the roof of the van and they're surfing on the van, and instantly my brain's like, oh no, this scene's gonna end really bad. Somebody's gonna get really hurt. Like, but then I'm like, wait, this isn't that kind of movie. This is, but we don't see anything like that. And our brains right away are being taught to go, hey, that's really bad.
That's dangerous. If you watched, like, I don't know, if you watched Jason Statham do it or whatever, you're like, cool, he's doing a cool action thing. You see Michael J. Fox playing a teenager do it, you're like, oh, that's dangerous. I mean, it's a different context. You see any kids or young people doing things? It just, I think back to something like Robin in the 1940s. He was a 12-year-old fighting alongside a grown man, fighting hard-boiled gangsters in the streets in the 1940s. And that was like, fine. He's the point of view of the kids. And this is a scenario we're fine with. And Burt Ward, not 12 years old, but he was also supposed to be a teenager, Batman's young ward. Okay, he's not like a child, but he's by the 60s. We aged him up a little bit, but he's still fighting crime alongside Batman in live action, because a 12-year-old might seem kind of weird, or you don't want a child actor on that show, fine. But then you get to the 1990s, big budget movie, Batman Forever, and you have Chris O'Donnell, who's a grown man, playing Robin. He's not a 12-year-old. He's not, I don't think he's even, I think he's supposed to be like 18. Like, I think he is supposed to be adult age, and Bruce is just helping this guy out. But even by the 90s, having a live action Robin was like, oh, this guy's got to be an adult, because people aren't going to accept a kid or a teenager in this role.
Yeah, they're worried about children being in danger.
Children sidekicks have been a staple since the 1940s. But by the 90s, live-action adaptations of them are already queasy about that idea, and it's only gotten worse from there. I'm surprised Harry Potter's still around. How many times have I heard the criticism of, man, Hogwarts is such a dangerous school, they get sued in real life, and... because that's the culture we live in, is bad things happen to kids, you sue. No one lets anything go anymore. Kids aren't supposed to go off and get into trouble. You just... So the adventure movie genre is basically dead because it's unbelievable for kids to have adventures anymore.
Yeah, well, I think that also goes back to what you said before, where it was like, oh, write what you know. Well, if we were to write what we know, there's no adventure. We didn't have a lot of adventure. It wasn't possible.
Our adventure was like that episode of SpongeBob where he sits in a cardboard box and makes up stories. And Squidward can't understand what's so fun about the cardboard box. That was more like our childhood. We don't...
Stay in the box.
Stay in the box and make up adventures.
And I think that's probably why we're getting, you know, directors that are either doing that, you know, the ones that are coming out is set in the 80s. Because yep. That's the last time they had adventures. And then anybody new, any new director doesn't have that experience. They don't have that to write about.
You're right. That's why we have things like Stranger Things. They set that in the 80s because you could do Stranger Things now. But besides the fact that the 80s is just a cooler vibe and like modern technology conveniences make writing
hard
more difficult, it's just, and those, and the fact that those adventure stories were most famous in the 80s, it's just, you can't really do it the same today.
People always out-logic your movies.
Yeah, they'll call it a plot hole, or...
Why didn't they just use their cell phone? No.
It's a suspension of disbelief problem, which is inherent to making any kind of entertainment work. Kids going on grand fantastical adventures just break suspension of disbelief nowadays. Or even something like Chronicles of Narnia, that's even older, but like, those movies flopped too. They were coming out when we were kids. Just didn't hit the same as something like Harry Potter, which I don't even know how they're going to do the new show, because it's kind of like I said, we're even more prudish about that stuff nowadays.
Is it going to be like sanitized? Like,
I think so. I would very
make it seem like they're not in that much danger.
I'm worried that's how it's going to be because of modern attitudes towards things like that.
Is it? It's going to be like, oh, it's more about the villain not getting what they want, not that the kids are ever in danger. It's just the villain getting all powerful.
Which the good thing about Harry Potter is that the earlier entries in the franchise are dangerous, but also a bit more sanitized to how it becomes later on. It's are they going to grow with the show is the thing, or is it going to be more sanitized the whole way through until like season 7 when they're like 25 years old in real life? And you're seeing like adult actors in these situations. I think another example I had in mind of how people just can't take this stuff is Ahsoka Tano from the Clone Wars show. When we were kids, Ahsoka Tano was about our age from the show. She was the audience point of view. Everybody grew up with her. And it's just fine. She's just a young Jedi, Anakin's apprentice in this situation. And then in the live action Ahsoka show, there were scenes where she becomes basically a kid again. I think she was about 12, fighting in the Clone Wars alongside Hayden Christensen's Anakin. And people kind of lost their minds online at that. Me included. I look at that and I'm like, ooh, seeing this in live action really calls to mind the child soldier of it all. And how traumatic a situation this must be for a kid to go through. But when you're watching the cartoon, it's just cool. You don't really think about it, that she's very young to be in a commanding position in a galactic war. You just sort of watch it.
I think that also comes down to, in animation, it's kind of hard to get a feel for really how old the characters are. You can tell me a character's 12. You can tell me a character's 14. But then it's like, okay, if I try to imagine a 12-year-old or a 14-year-old, and then it's like, oh, no, this is what a 12-year-old looks like. You're like, that's what I thought like a 10-year-old or an 8-year-old looked like. I think that also applies as well, because in a cartoon, there's not a heck of a lot you can do other than make them smaller to be like, yeah, this character's 12. But your understanding of a 12-year-old is not usually not correct unless you're like a parent who exactly has a 12-year-old.
That's true. But I also think people's expectations, like I said, for teenagers are just lower now. I don't think adults believe kids and teenagers are capable of as much as they are. So when you get to live action, you're like, oh, well, you know, I don't believe a kid could take on that situation. So they don't put them in challenging situations. Just on the belief that because they're kids, they shouldn't have to face challenges. I think kids and teenagers are a lot more capable in the right circumstances, more capable than many adults even. But they're sort of infantilized and like, oh, don't take that on. You can have more responsibilities when you're older. We'll just kind of do everything for you and coddle you and helicopter parent you. And like, it's a far cry from the days of, once again, come back when the streetlights are on. If you get really hurt or whatever, you'll probably deal with it or find a way to help yourself, or your friends will help you, or you kind of build your own communities and learn to get out of your own scrapes.
Well, I feel like that was kind of like, we caught the very tail end of that, but we've had this generation with this gap where they didn't experience any of that. But I feel like knowing more, it's sort of swinging back around the other way. So maybe that will change things in movies as well.
Perhaps.
Because it seems like the teens of today are trying to break out of that shell. That's been this protective bubble that has been reinforced over the years. And it's like, no, we don't want that.
What I'm seeing with a lot of kids today is, and this is just based on a lot of parents that I know, they seem to be putting their kids in a very, very structured environment. They do give them responsibility. They do teach them self-assuring skills, but it is a lot of, here is your exact schedule. You don't have time to mess around and make mistakes, really, with other kids or whatever, unless you're like on the schoolyard or something. And even that mess around and make mistakes time, if you do have any, you're probably spending it on the internet anyway. So like, kids' time is a lot more limited to, like, they don't really explore or do stupid things because they're basically always under some kind of supervision or in a controlled environment. Even if they're doing something kind of dangerous and learning things, it's more supervised.
Yeah, it's very... It's the helicopter parent stuff.
Yeah. Like, you learn, like, for example, sporting. You're going to learn teamwork. You're going to learn how to take some hits and challenge yourself and push yourself further. Good sportsmanship. There's a lot of things sports learn, and a lot of kids do get hurt in that. But you're also in this controlled environment. This isn't like, you know, when I was a kid, for example, like the schoolyard brawls we used to have when things went really badly. To the point where the teachers were like, okay, no, you have to have like some high school volunteer kid referee you now because it gets way too rowdy with the fist fights on the schoolyard when like nobody's watching you. Or the slow devolution of, okay, when we were little, we used to be able to play football on the schoolyard. Oh, now that's too dangerous. So it's two hand touch. Oh, that's too dangerous. Flag football now.
Are they even allowed to do that anymore?
Probably not. And that was just our childhood. It was way more violent in previous generations.
You're not allowed to throw the football?
Probably
throwing
not.
Things is bad.
I remember also at my school, you know, they put a fence around the schoolyard. Used to be able to go out for lunch just because our school was close. Like, our elementary school was pretty close. Like, when I was 12 years old or so, I used to be able to go out down the street, go to Bulk Barn or whatever, or get a burger somewhere, McDonald's or something. And then you needed a note from a parent to go out, and then they put a fence around the school and said you're not allowed out at all.
It doesn't help that here in Ontario, it's like they build jails. The same company that builds jails builds schools, so they look the same.
Yeah. That's just my experience as a kid coming up between 1998 and 2012 and like in my elementary school years, I saw the slow progression of my rights being taken away as a kid and more, you can't do this. When we were already proved our independence, we could go out to my friend's house or go out for lunch and it didn't matter. And my teacher was like, even when the note thing came in, she was like, I know you guys are fine. Just go anyway. But the administration definitely would not have liked that if they knew.
But it only takes a couple more years before kids will grow into it and not know about it to begin with. And exactly. Then it becomes that, okay, you stay in this fence. You stay in your box.
Exactly. The kids a couple years under us never went anywhere.
No.
But we did go places, and then they told us we couldn't. And even then, we were already restricted compared to kids before us. So that's...
That's why they're closing the box tighter and tighter, and now I see a lot more breaking out because they've made the box too tight.
Yeah, that's interesting. Curious to see how that goes. I do believe part of the reason, this is kind of going into my next point, part of the reason kids don't, people don't believe in the capabilities of kids to handle themselves independently without supervision is because a lot of writers of today's media, I feel like they disbelieve in themselves to handle things as young adults or as like Gen Z millennials, because we were growing up in this more helicopter parenting environment. We were getting the box closed in on us. So basically, if you're a writer under 40, I feel like you sort of had this idea of, well, I probably couldn't have done that when I was 12, so why would I ever write a 12-year-old doing that? And I think that's where a lot of that... I think Alan Moore had a very good quote in regards to North America's sense of arrested development. This is the final point I want to get into, and that's what kind of spins it off. In regards to our fixation on superhero movies, as a culture in particular, he said, I think the impact of superheroes on popular culture is both tremendously embarrassing and not a little worrying. While these characters were originally perfectly suited to stimulating the imaginations of their 12 or 13-year-old audience, today's franchised Ubermenschen, aimed at a supposedly adult audience, seemed to be serving some kind of different function and fulfilling different needs. Primarily, mass-market superhero movies seem to be abetting an audience who do not wish to relinquish their grip on A, their relatively reassuring childhoods, or B, the relatively reassuring 20th century. The continuing popularity of these movies, to me, suggests some kind of deliberate, self-imposed state of emotional arrest. Combined with a numbing condition of cultural stasis that can be witnessed in comics, movies, popular music, and indeed right across the cultural spectrum.
So basically, superheroes are for kids, and we're clinging to being kids. Or
yeah, this is the guy who wrote Watchmen, which is sort of the comic that let adults feel like, well, comics can be for adults, which he was, I believe, at the time parodying the rise of adult themes in a traditionally children's medium. It was nearly parody of ultra-violence in comics at the time.
That's great. Just take it to the extreme.
Yeah, that people immediately latched onto and were like, this confirms this is cool. Things can be violent and adult. And then comics have basically been like that ever since, targeted more towards adults. And I agree with Alan Moore here. And he's like, the guy who wrote Watchmen is basically like, yeah, these things were for kids and we can't let them go. And they're like acting like these things for kids are for adult audiences too. There's like this level of seriousness and trying to make it seem more legitimate where the source material just really isn't in his eyes. And I get where he's coming from. Not that these things lack legitimacy. When I first heard this quote many, many years ago, I had a strong gut reaction of very much disagreeing with him. Because, you know, I was a young adult who liked these superhero movies, and I felt like I was on the offending end of that. But a couple of years on, I'm like, no, we as a culture definitely are afraid of challenging ourselves in fundamental ways. Superheroes used to be for children, now they're for teenagers and young adults. And we as a culture, a lot of individuals in this culture are not really growing up ourselves. We've been conditioned to seek comfort over challenge, and our choices in media reflect those values. People complain that we aren't given new and original content, but we mostly chose those safe and IP-driven ones over new things they give us. There's a reason we're given these things so much, because the trend over time was these things made more money. Plain and simple. And I believe modern writers have a tendency to think like children. They're overly emotional, offer easy answers for their characters or worlds, and lack a grounding in reality, dare to show them that worldviews which don't align with their own. Like, try to tell them this isn't really representative of reality, and they'll get very angry.
Well, I feel like a lot of movies don't really put real challenges in front of their characters
either. No, it's easy. Everything's easy.
Everything is easy.
So when writers sort of have this childlike mentality, how can they write meaningful coming-of-age stories when they lack the ability to critically reflect on their own coming-of-age years if they've ever really grown past them? It's, we as a culture are in a state of arrested development right now. So how can you write good coming-of-age stories? It's very hard to do that. It's like, well, you can write about stuff you experienced as a kid, but obviously you're not really growing beyond your own childhood into like critically reflecting adulthood. Like, my basic worldview right now on media is we're in a funhouse. I think you look at media from most of the 20th century, and it was written by people who had real strong experiences. You get stuff like Lord of the Rings, a very strong world written by somebody who was very anti-war because he lived through the horrors of World War I. J.R.R. Tolkien is a war vet who lived through one of the most brutal, traumatic wars in human history. And modern writers give us stuff like Rings of Power, which is like a funhouse reimagining of that. Like, J.R.R. Tolkien put a mirror up to our reality and turned it into a fantasy. And modern shows are like, modern Lord of the Rings adaptations are like a mirror on Tolkien's work, which completely distorts it because they're not reflecting reality. They're reflecting
a reflection of
yeah. reality. And that is most of what we consume now. We used to write stories about real things, and now we're writing reflections based on things because nobody has lived experience worth telling. At least in North America, anyway. People who are in writing positions in Hollywood. Combine that with arrested development and coming of age stories are just dead right now. That's my take on that, anyway. But I figure we'll get more and better coming-of-age stories when audiences grow up and choose more challenging media, and these choices entice Hollywood to make more of those things. So, you know, it's up to us to pick the good stuff, and then they'll make more good stuff because that's what we're choosing. They follow the money. If you choose low-effort slop, we're going to get more low-effort slop. If you choose good things, we get more good things, which makes us a more media-literate society, which maybe you'll retroactively, it'll make us grow up a little bit more, and then we can get coming-of-age stories again, because people will actually be moving forward, and Hollywood will be moving forward. They'll want to tell these stories again. And
But you're right. We are stunted essentially
as a whole
locked
culture.
In as children. So maybe we're in that gap period, because when I think about like my parents, they're already had a house, had two kids, you know, they were like full blown adults, but then you come down one generation to me and it's like, I haven't grown up yet. So is it possible that there's a gap where it's like, okay, because we've put this, you know, our generation isn't growing up till they're in their 30s.
Basically.
So
yeah.
Are we riding through a period where there is nobody who's grown up essentially?
I feel like that's effectively what's happening. Basically for people up to 40, I'd argue, because I think younger writers are the ones who'd be making these stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why a lot of the stories you get are really shallow, because there's really nothing they have to comment on. Like you said, in terms of us growing up, I think to myself, and I told you this earlier, if I happen to theoretically be in a room with a bunch of teenagers and children, my first gut instinct, oh, something goes wrong. Raised my whole life, oh, you know, something goes wrong, get an adult for help. And then if something were to go wrong, I have to consciously realize, oh, shoot, I'm the adult.
I'm the adult.
I don't
now.
Know what to do.
How a whole room of children look at you. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
I don't know what I'm doing.
I'm not the adult.
So I feel like, you know, critically reflecting on myself, I don't put myself in positions of responsibility or authority because I don't feel equipped to handle them. I'm 26, and I feel like 26-year-olds were way ahead of me before. They had more stable careers. They were married. They had kids. They, you know, moved out way sooner. You know, I look at, like, my mom, for example. She finished school when she was 18. I think she moved to England basically right after, like, she went to college and moved to England and lived abroad for a while. And I think she got married around 24, had me by 29. I'm like, well, I look at my mom, she's way ahead of me at the same age when in the 90s. Had a really good stable job at the, you know, was making a good wage. So, just as an example, and she's just a couple generations back, she's a Gen X, and, you know, that generation got pretty screwed generally, but, you know, like even she was doing reasonably better than I am at the same age. And once again, maybe that's not a lack of opportunity, but it might be just emotional stunting in a way. It's just, yeah, just different expectations as we were growing up. And I also look at, like, in high school, how many people our age didn't get their driver's licenses at 16, me included? I know, you know, somebody like you is, you know, you got your learner's permit as fast as possible. But a lot of people I knew, me included, just didn't do that until they absolutely had to. We got behind for many, many years. Like, a lot of people I know drive now, but, like, the amount of people our age in their mid-20s who can't or won't drive because they're too anxious to. Like, this is, like, we're having trouble growing up in ways that, like, 30 years ago, like, what, you're crazy. You don't have your license at 16, driving all the time. You got that chance for freedom, you take it immediately. And we choose not to.
Well, and I think that also limits your potential to actually experience things. Like, to have adventures, you have to go places. And everything's so developed now, especially where we live around. Adventures are far away, and you need vehicles to move. And, you know, maybe that's generalizing for people, because it's like, okay, well, yeah, we're from a fairly developed area. We're in North America. But Hollywood writers are coming from this experience. This is what most of them are growing up with.
Yeah.
So it kind of is a fair comparison, even though it may not be the general experience that most people have. For Hollywood, it kind of is.
Yeah. this is the best they can do because this is sort of how society has changed over time. It's just, since the 80s, we have become in a progressive state of arrested development, and that has changed a lot of things fundamentally about our culture. It's changed the media we consume. We've gone for more nostalgic fare, and that in turn has made Hollywood show us more of these things, which in turn makes us crave more comfort, and we're not seeking out challenges the same way. We're actively avoiding challenging things, and so the film industry is changing. People's perceptions of teenagers are changing. They don't really know what teenagers are into anymore. And writers and teenagers themselves just aren't growing up the same way. So I think that's why the coming of age genre is sort of dead in the water right now as a culture.
We learned the wrong lesson from Peter Pan.
Yeah. No, that's a pretty perfect example. Never grow up. Ever. I'm only watching the first two-thirds of Peter Pan. It's never okay to move on. And that's what we'll leave you with. Unless you have anything else, Dad.
Wait. They did that one with Robin Williams where he did grow up. And then the lesson was, why did you grow up, you stupid idiot?
Yeah. Yeah, Hook. So, yeah.
I blame Disney and Peter Pan.
Blaming Disney is always a good bet.
Well, I do find that most Disney things, even though they're, like Marvel movies, are aimed towards us, but their messages are not that buried. They're not that complicated. They're very childlike. And I've complained about this before with Marvel movies where I'm like, why are the lessons for children? Children are not watching these movies. No child watches Marvel movies. They don't care.
But it's because we're the demographic, and our demographic is comparatively childlike for our age.
Or
this is what people kind of expect, and this is what we're fine with.
Well, which way does it go? Is it that we are childlike, so they treat us childlike? Or do they treat us childlike and then we become childlike?
I think it's more of that one.
I feel like it
based on my own experience. Once again, going back to based on our own experience of getting more of our rights stripped away and more getting put in the box over time, I do think we became more childlike the more restrictions were placed on us.
And they treated us like childlike, which made us stay childlike, essentially.
I feel like I was nearly more independent as a kid than I was in high school and college. I tried to explore more, and then in high school and college, it was more restrictive as a culture, as a the places I was in.
Actually, yeah, I felt more independent when I was in elementary school and going out till the streetlights.
Yeah.
You know, oh, streetlights are on, I better get home. You know, I actually had adventures back then, and then high school just kind of went, everything was like locked down and you know, all weird stuff. And then university, I felt like a fish out of water. I'm like, I don't know what to do. But then thinking about it, I'm like, wait a second. I was independent as a child. What the heck happened in that period of time where
we spent most of our first year university in our room?
We went to Walmart one time and I felt weird doing it.
Yeah, we never really. There were a couple parties, but our residence was pretty dead on the whole. Like, it wasn't the college experience you expect from movies, for sure. And the other years were also pretty mundane. We basically just went there for school, and like, parties and adventurous stuff was happening, but it didn't feel that prevalent, at least not to me. I wasn't seeking it out. I didn't really find it, stumble into it.
No, and it just seemed like that was the point. It's like, oh, you just got let out into the open world part of the video game. And you're like, wait, I don't remember the tutorial. There was no tutorial for this part. What do I do?
I feel like other generations got to that. It's like, you know what? Maybe it's like a video game where old games used to be quick and to the point. You didn't always even get a tutorial, and you were just sort of thrown in, and you had to figure it out. And then you did that, and you'll never get to the final level. It's very, very challenging. But if you got to the final level in, like, original Mario Bros. Games, you're like, God tier. Modern games hold your hand. They're hundreds of hours long. The tutorial doesn't end for 20 hours. And then you're like, can I get to the game? I'm sick of the tutorial. Turn off things. Turn off the hints.
Why am I still learning how to play this game?
It's way longer. It's way more bloated, but there's somehow less to do. Everything's more repetitive. And then you look at that guy who beat Mario Bros. In the 80s, and you're like, you're a god.
How?
It was so much more.
Teach me your ways.
It was so much more simple a game, but you're way more respect for you for actually doing it. Like, the game is more complicated now, but it's so much more hand-holdy, and... Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe there was a... Maybe there was a shift in the world, I guess, because...
I think it started in the 80s. I don't think it's a coincidence that adventure...
We caught the tail end of it, but I feel like that tail end was the last little bit. Because even my brother doesn't really remember much of that. He didn't have a lot of those experiences. And he's only a couple years younger than me.
I think this thing started in the 90s, the late 80s, 90s, and slowly got worse until the early 2010s. And that's, well, probably even still getting worse. But I just remember the early 10s. And that's where we're at now. We're, like you said, the box is finally small enough that people are contained by it and they want to rebel again and break out. And I'm like, yeah, these kids are going to have good coming of age stories because they're finally rebels again. Like, you know, we're finally going back to...
I got barely enough for a coming of age movie. Barely enough.
Okay.
One time, we hopped a fence and went into the sewer pipe and then got chased out of the sewer pipe by a homeless guy. And that was my adventure.
Yeah, I mean, you and I had, like, some of our filming places.
We did sewer pipe adventures, too.
We had the sewer pipe adventures. We got chased off.
But even then, people thought that was weird at the time when we did that.
You and I got chased off of a couple of properties when we were filming things.
But that was abnormal. If we talked about that with people we knew at the time, they'd be like, what?
You guys are weird and taking chances.
But when I did it in elementary school with my friends then, it was cool. It was fun. We had an adventure. But then during that period where everything was weird, it's like, whoa, that's weird. Why would you do that? Why would you do something that's outside the box? Stay in the box where you're safe in the box. No, I don't want to be safe in the box. I want to run away from homeless people.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to run away from homeless people, but maybe that's just how I've been trained now.
Yeah. So that's a bit of our experiences combined with some classic coming of age. Any more to add?
No, that's it. That's all I got.
Yeah, so that's the basic. We as a society need to grow up, make better choices, more challenging choices, and maybe that will... The younger people need to get out of the box, rebel harder, and then maybe by the time they're old enough to write stuff in Hollywood, they'll have better stories to tell.
Do it. If you feel like you're in a box, do it.
Yeah. Just start. But like, teenagers need to start rebelling and having interesting stories again. That's my take.
You can't get in trouble for stuff if you're a teenager. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
Not real trouble.
Yeah, that was always sort of our thing was, we're just dumb teenagers. We'll get away with it.
You know, running on the railroad tracks is illegal.
I don't care.
Filming on the railroad tracks is even more illegal.
We'll get away with it. But then as soon as we turned 18, we're like, no, we can't use that excuse anymore.
I don't think
anymore.
I can get away with it anymore.
Anyway, where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram at jchurchtpm.
And you can find me on Instagram at ThoughtPlane Media. And check out ThoughtPlane.ca for everything else we do. There's hundreds of posts for free. And you can donate a buck or two there if you like our work and you're feeling generous. We hope to see you on the next Close Up with Ryan and Joe, featuring Justin. Till next time.
Ka-chow.